Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Welcome to Forward Thinking, the show that looks at the future and says, hey, how you doing? I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm not going after that. Nah, I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And we wanted to talk a bit about communication and speed of communication and throughput of information, because these are different terms and often we can easily confuse them, mostly because of just the terminology we tend to use when discussing this stuff casually. Like, hey, you know, my internet speed is terrible. It's really, really slow. And what we mean by that usually is that the amount of information we are able to get over a given span of time is less than what we would like. That's generally speaking what we mean when we say
right.
My internet's slow.
Yeah, we mean this web page is taking forever to load, like 4 seconds. It's terrible.
Though it's funny because there are a lot of different reasons a web page could be taking forever to load, right? It could be a problem. It could be that the server is slow.
Right.
Or it could be a problem with the information getting from the server to you.
Right. There could be some problems with switches or routers between the server and your computer.
It could be a problem with your computer.
It could just be that your
hard drive is slow.
But the graphic processor is not performing.
Exactly.
Yeah, the one thing that you can rest assured is that those ones and zeros are traveling as fast as they possibly can through whichever given pathway is available to them. So we really wanted to kind of illustrate the difference between speed and throughput. And I have kind of an analogy that I'm going to try and clumsily set up to sort of explain this. So let's imagine that the three of us live in three different cities and they're very far apart. And we would like to occasionally visit one another. Now, in each of our cities, we have these massive highways that have maybe they're 10 lanes across, and they allow thousands of cars on them at any given time, and they can all be traveling at top speed safely because of the way these highways are designed.
They're probably autonomous cars then, right?
Clearly.
Sure. And then – but the problem is that when you start traveling, when you get about, maybe a third of the way from my city to Lauren's city – that highway suddenly narrows down to one lane. And so those 10 lanes are now compacted into one lane. And it's not that the cars have – that any individual car would have to move slower down that lane. It's that you now have to compress all that traffic down into the one lane of traffic. And you can't have two cars in superposition on each other because physics don't work that way, y'all. And you would end up having a big old smash-up on the highway. So that's a bottleneck. That's where we now are going to see traffic slow down, even though that lead car would still be able to continue moving at the same speed it was on when the highway had 10 lanes wide. And if the same thing is true between Lauren City and Joe City and Joe City and my city, then traveling between the two, we would experience some slowdown.
Yeah, even though we have these hyper-efficient cars.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and we can see that difference in terms of information. And I don't know if you've heard about this thing called fiber to the home.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Fiber to the home is trying to rectify what's a really common bottleneck in the communication grid, right?
Sure.
That it may be that the backbone, you know, that the public wire, that if it's optical fiber or something like that.
Yeah, the cable
that's carrying the information, it has a lot of throughput, but suddenly it needs to branch off and get to your house, and you've got some dinky little, you know, rolled up piece of tinfoil that's transmitting
your
home.
You have someone who gets the message and walks to your front door, knocks on your door, hands you the message, then you has to wait for you to send the reply,
right.
And they walk back.
And in that case, it's almost like, well, what's the point of the
You have this incredibly fast connection to the node, the network node that's in your neighborhood. But then from the node to your home, it's a much slower connection, so it doesn't really matter. The same thing is true if you have a really fast connection to your home, but one of the big connections on the internet, the backbone, if it hasn't already been outfitted with fiber, with optic fiber, or fiber optics, I should say, a fiber optic cable, then while you could send things and get things really quickly from your node, once it hit that, it would start to slow down anyway. So really, we're looking at the internet as an entire unified system. It's kind of interesting to me because One of the things that's been in the news a lot over the last couple of years is that Google in the United States, in Kansas City, rolled out the Google Fiber Hood. So they were making these neighborhoods rolling out this Google Fiber that would give you a 1 gigabit per second download speed and nearly as fast upload speed. In fact, the download and upload speeds are almost the same, which is unheard of. I mean,
right.
In most networks, you get a fraction of the upload speed that you get with download. And part of that is because, the networks are trying to save this bandwidth. This is, for some networks, a limited amount of capacity that they have to handle network traffic. And this helps cut that down because most people don't upload that much stuff that frequently.
And if you are a private citizen uploading a lot of data, what are you probably doing?
Well, these days you might be uploading just videos that you're taking and you want to put them on Facebook. You know, earlier days.
I would say the assumption would be more likely that you were pirating.
Right.
Well,
and
you were feeding on, you know, you were, here's every Metallica album ever made.
And to rival the amount that people are downloading on, streaming television or something like that.
Sure, yeah. Well, 10 years ago, I would say that pirating would definitely be one of the concerns if you were uploading a lot of stuff. These days, because there are so many options to host media from people legitimately, that you could have people stepping it up. And there's so many products out there that allow you to capture video and upload video. And you know, YouTube is allowing you to put up as much stuff as you like. Then there's really the capacity to actually upload a lot more than you used to. But unfortunately, the actual internet service providers haven't necessarily caught up to that. So still with a lot of ISPs, you get a pretty decent download speed, but a kind of weedy upload speed in comparison. Google Fiber was a little bit different. Like, this gigabit down, it was matched by almost a gigabit up. Mm-hmm. So, one question people have had is, what would you use that for? I mean, that's so much data in such a short amount of time.
We'll find a way.
Well, yeah. Right now the answer is kind of I don't know. But that's not to say that that's always going to be the case. Just because we can't imagine it now doesn't mean that it's going to be like that forever. But
when it comes to technology, I mean, if there's a free lunch, people are going to find a way to eat it.
Well, and right now there was an article that was on Slate that was written by Farad Manju, who said that, you know, in his experience of using it, he actually went to Kansas City and tried it out. By the way, Kansas City, for those who don't know, people who aren't in the United States or aren't familiar with the geography.
What state's it in?
Yeah. It's actually in two. There are two states that have a Kansas City, and Google has rolled out fiber to both of them. When I say Kansas City, I'm talking about both Kansas cities. But, Manju went to Kansas City to try this out and said that he didn't have any problem accessing anything. Like, he could stream several videos all at the same time. But then when he went home, he had a 22 megabit per second connection, which is, you know, far smaller than the 1 gigabit per second, you know, far less throughput, but was still not having any trouble with the videos. So he said, well, really, everything I would do, I can kind of do already. So what's the advantage?
Like, unless you're trying to test the limits.
And even then, again, you are limited not just by the speed that's coming into your home, but the speed that's going across the core of the network. On IEEE's website, there's an article written by Dennis Weller and Bill Woodcock that point out that there are internet exchange points. This is like the core of the internet. This is where the major traffic is switching across, that don't have this fiber optic cable yet. The rollout was going really heavily in the 1990s, but then investment started to peter off toward the end of the 1990s. And so some parts of the core of the internet never got upgraded. So if you don't have the core of the internet covered, then, again, that's a bottleneck. That's going to cause, if there's some traffic that needs to go through that point, you don't really benefit from that amazing throughput. And in fact, that was one of the points that people have made, that it's not that Google Fiber isn't fast enough. It's that the rest of the internet isn't fast enough to really take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. However, it's a good thing to have sort of as a future-proofing system.
Sure.
And even then, we know. I mean, back in the day, I remember when I had a 256 megabyte hard drive. And I thought, well, there's no way I would ever fill this
up. This is it forever. Like,
yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah. I'll never need to upgrade again. But we learn, you know, we will find ways of meeting that capacity over time. It just might take a while before that happens.
But, yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting that we'll always find ways to fill capacity, I think. Because if you think about, all the ways that we used to send information that are really sort of slowly getting transferred to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That we used to send letters in the mail all the time. We still do that some, but a lot of that's email now.
Right.
We used to, you know, get our TV from cable or from broadcast. Lots of people still do that, but a lot of people are just watching TV on the internet.
Yeah, there's an increasing number of people.
Yeah,
who,
they hit in December, Hulu Plus hit like 30 million subscribers. So,
dang.
There's quite a few people who are cutting the cable otherwise. Yeah.
We're offloading from all these traditional routes of information to the single grid, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a good point. And it's interesting to me to see what the difference is between the average download speed and the Google Fiber download speed. So remember, I was talking about the Google Fiber's 1 gigabit per second. Now, according to the Slate article, it was say that the average American download speed is closer to 6.7 megabits per second, which is pretty low. I mean, that's incredibly low. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a tiny little fraction of the 1 gigabit per second. Other outlets have estimated at a different speed. There was one called Net Index that says it's more like 17.71 megabits per second. It all depends on how you measure those speeds.
Sure.
It's usually a sampling, kind of mm-hmm. like Nielsen ratings, right? Except for internet speeds. You take the sample of what these computer speeds are, or the data transmission rates, I guess I should say. And then you sort of average that out across the United States. So, it's interesting to me because the Net Index also ranks countries.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guess they call it a country, but, what city, what city has the fastest download connection according to Net Index? Keeping in mind that other companies have different lists.
We're going to share.
Uh-huh. Wait. You said it's a city and a country?
And a country.
Well,
the same.
They're ranking.
Vatican City.
No, the Pope does not have a direct line to the internet.
You have not seen the
Pope's chambers.
Right. Well, that's not the
Pope's
one.
Pope's inner chamber is totally tech savvy.
This master control program
all
right
there.
All
kinds of computers everywhere.
Yeah. No, this is.
He's a big gamer, too.
Nah,
he does the.
Hong Kong. I'm taking putting you out of your misery. It's Hong Kong. That's what they listed.
Okay.
You know, so Hong Kong, at 44
I mean,
point.
I can see that.
They have an average of 44.39 megabits per second
wow.
download speed.
Mm.
The others in the top five include Singapore with 38.75 megabits per second, Lithuania with 38.73, Taiwan with 34.85, and South Korea brings up the rear in the top five with 34.19. Sorry?
Well, that seems to make sense. I mean, aren't all those places pretty densely populated?
Very
urban.
Yep.
So that would it's not like they're having to factor in all the farmers out in the middle of nowhere who are.
Well, and they're also smaller than places like the United States, where we have some very dense urban areas, but we also have some very wide spaces between us and some other populations in the United States. So the other top 10 included Luxembourg, Japan, Netherlands, Switzerland, and Sweden. Sweden had 29.36 megabits per second. United States ranked in at 31st. And then if you look at the United States, just trying to figure out which states have the fastest. Well, first of all, the state we live in, Georgia, ranks 22nd out of the 50 states with 18.51 megabits per second. So we're still over the average, the national average.
We're in the top half of something.
Yes, we are. Something to be proud of. So can you take a guess at which state, according to Net Index, has the fastest bit rate speed?
If we're going to go for small and compact, I would say what? Rhode Island?
Rhode Island?
Tennessee.
It was Delaware. You were on the right track there, Vogelbaum. But yeah, Delaware with 25.29 So that again is according to NetIndex. So your mileage may vary depending upon which oracle you consult when you try to figure out who has the fastest data transmission speeds.
Well, no, I said Tennessee because I have no idea to what extent this is true. But when I go home to my hometown of Chattanooga, the local electric power board has been advertising their fiber optic service, and there's some kind of claim. I don't want to misrepresent them. I don't remember exactly, but there's some kind of superlative claim they make. You know, this is the fastest fiber optic internet access ever
in Chattanooga.
With asterisk. I don't remember exactly what. I mean, that may not be fair, but
right,
it's
right.
Something they claim it's really, really fast. And at my parents' house, really fast internet, I will say.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I've lived in places where the connections weren't so great and it was a real pain. And then I've, the place where I live now, the connection tends to be really, really good. So, I mean, it all depends on where you live, what sort of connections are to your house. And again, like we're talking the difference between speed and throughput. When you're talking about speed,
yeah.
depending again upon whom you ask, you know, most will say, oh, it's essentially the speed of light.
Yeah, that's one thing I wanted to bring up. So as we established at the beginning, we keep saying speed, but we are talking about throughput.
Yeah.
What role does the actual physical speed play? I mean, how fast are these signals going, and does that part even matter?
They're going really, really fast. Like so fast that on Earth, it almost doesn't matter what the actual speed is because it's so fast as to mm-hmm. us to seem close to instantaneous.
Yeah, I've read some different figures and I don't know which one is correct, but I mean some have basically said I've seen like that signals in fiber optic cable tend to travel at like 60% of the speed of light, and then I've seen others that say it's like 90-something%.
Which is a huge difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Even at 60%, it's still really fast, but no, a 30% difference in claims is pretty amazing.
Yeah, so I have no idea who to trust there, and I don't know how fast that blip really goes.
Yeah, and again, I think part of that is that there are so many places where that blip could encounter congestion that mm-hmm. it makes mm-hmm. it problematic to measure that speed. Because if you're talking about just through a fiber optic cable, then, you know, you would imagine that it would move at the speed that light would travel through that medium. Now, keep in mind that, of course, light does not travel through every medium at the same speed. When we say the speed of light, generally what we're talking about is the speed of light through the vacuum of space.
Mm-hmm.
But light,
but
just
glass
like,
is not the vacuum of space.
Exactly.
So therefore,
right. So light does travel through different media at different speeds.
Right. So, but here's an interesting question: why is fiber optic cable so much faster than a traditional cable? Because if I'm not wrong, both signals would technically be traveling at something like the speed of light. Right. It's, that one is sending blips of light through a tiny glass wire. And it's being reflected down along the axis of that wire. And then the other is sending an electromagnetic pulse along
essentially sending
a cable.
Electrons through a cable.
Yeah. But wouldn't both of those essentially be traveling at the speed of light? Or is there a different speed of light in those two media?
I'm guessing that there is a difference in the speed of light in those two media, but I think the bigger issue here is again throughput.
Yeah,
it's not the speed of the information traveling along the distance of the cable.
Right,
it's how much of information can that cable accommodate at one time.
Yeah, so I've also read that I think that fiber optic cable has less interference.
That's
right?
True.
That it's less susceptible to I don't know what maybe a magnetic field or something
sure.
like that messing up the signal and causing you to have to send it again.
Have you ever listened to music over a speaker and had a phone go off near it and then get that stuttering noise?
Sure, the static.
You know, it sounds like an
old-fashioned telegram.
It's a great premise for a sci-fi movie, right? You know, why are the phones doing that?
Yeah, it's because of that electromagnetic field. It's the electromagnetic field, and it's because your speakers have really lousy shielding around the cables
mm-hmm.
because the electromagnetic field is interfering with the transmission of signals across those cables, and mm-hmm. that's why you're picking up this erratic noise that shouldn't be there.
Right.
So if you shield the cables more thoroughly, then that protects against that. Mm-hmm. Same sort of thing. You also can get electron leakage through these cables, and that can cause errors in transmission. So if mm-hmm. I were to send a message over a copper cable and there was a lot of leakage along the line, you could get errors on the other end of it. You know, the file would not end up loading correctly.
Well,
unless you had really good error protection on there, whereas detection and protection and where they could account for
it'll
that.
It'll slow it down in any
yes.
case
right.
when you have to send the packet again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And the internet's designed to allow for that. I mean, that's one of the big advantages of the way the internet works is that, the files are broken up into packets. Those packets go across the network. They don't all necessarily follow the exact same pathway, and there are duplicates that get across so that when the receiving computer starts getting these packets together, it just starts putting it together like it's a puzzle, but mm-hmm. it's a puzzle where you already know where every single piece is supposed to go. And once you have, you know, packet number 12, you don't need any of the other packet number 12s. And you just grab the packets that you need and put it back together.
Mm-hmm.
That's an oversimplification of what's going on with packet switching, but that's the general idea. And it's to make the internet more robust and to allow for the fact that sometimes you run into these problems with congestion, and that's one way to get around it. Literally, you're going around the congestion to go take a mm-hmm. different pathway to get
right.
your destination.
You can also compress the files down in various ways. I mean,
sure.
I mean, even, you know, not even just like a zip file, but it's a process that many computers will go through while they are sending information.
Right, and that helps too because you're actually reducing the amount of information that needs to be sent across the network. Thus, again, you're not making the file move faster. You're just making less information so that you
it's
don't have
to put together on the
yeah.
other side. Yeah.
Hmm.
What about microwaves? I've heard that especially in some really, really high energy trading companies are starting to look at microwaves as a method of communication.
Well, if 30 Rock has taught me anything, microwaves are really important. There's a whole division at GE where it was. Am I thinking of the right thing?
No, I
have
what you're talking
idea.
About. Yeah, yeah.
No
Jack
Donaghy's
microwaves
is...
division.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, these trading firms are dealing with trades that are going on, by computers. Joe, you were talking about it a little bit earlier.
Oh, yeah. They've got these robots that do trades for them, right? They're big computer brains, and they're way smarter than us, or at least they're way better at...
way faster than us at processing.
They're way better at playing this weird game where they make money by just making trades faster than anybody else can. And so they might buy and sell a stock like 8 times within half a second. And the money they're making is directly dependent on how fast they can transmit the signal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're responding to market pressures and, they have to know when there's like a trend in the market, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're checking the differences between different markets, and I think
right.
playing off of that. So.
Wow. So,
yeah.
So for them, time really is money.
Literally, one company, TradeWorks, is putting together this microwave network, and they say that it's going to, shave maybe 2.3 milliseconds off of the transfer process,
mm-hmm.
and that this 2.3 milliseconds could save 0.08 cents per share traded, which could be worth like over $1,000 a day to anyone who's doing this.
This is all crazy to me.
To the point that people are NASDAQ and CME are putting together a network that they're going to be charging like $20,000 a month for people to use.
Your money witchcraft frightens me.
And
well, I mean, this is a tangent, but it just.
It's fascinating to me that all of this is just because, you know, microwaves, you've got these dish networks that are sending signals through the air. They don't have to go through cables.
Right.
They don't have to go around curves or bends. You don't have any kind of degradation.
Right.
Gotcha.
Or you do have degradation, but it's a different kind.
But it's like a direct line of sight kind
right.
of transmission as opposed to whatever pathway it would have to take in order. It's amazing to me that little could make that
big of a difference.
That big of a difference, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just cumulative, right? And what I was about to say a second ago, it's crazy. This is how people are making money. I mean, when I think originally a stock market, I think like you're investing in a business that you expect to succeed.
Right.
But at this point, you're investing in a business that you predict will increase in the price of the stock at some amount within the next second.
Right, right. Yeah.
micromanaging to that extent does fill me with a sense of dread.
Hey, you know, we're so good at it now.
Well, the robots
why
are anyway.
No. To me, it feels like you're putting together like a cheat code so that you can press a single button and go Hadouken rather than just press
To me, what this tells me is that in the future, not only are the robots going to get smarter and more capable at destroying us, but they will also have all the money.
Weren't we talking about the speed of communication?
We were.
Okay. That's why, you know, robots are the ones who are really good at it.
Well, how crazy will this get? I mean, so again, if we're not talking about speed, which we pretty much know the upper limit there, but what's the upper limit on throughput?
That's a good question.
I was reading about in the research I was doing for the episode that some researchers, I think it was a Dutch-Japanese partnership.
Mm-hmm.
There were some scientists who put together a 12-core optical fiber that could deliver 1 petabit per second.
That's
across.
A lot.
I don't even understand that number. That's great.
It
goes kilobit, megabit, gigabit, terabit, petabit.
Yeah,
then up to exobit.
Yeah. And so this thing could deliver, it could carry a petabit of information across, I think it was something like 50 kilometers in 1 second.
Yeah, and that's a lot.
That's just, like you could transmit the entire internet back and forth between some buildings in, I don't know, like 5 minutes.
Well, essentially you could do the Library of Congress in a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Like the entire, everything in the Library of Congress in a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's impressive. I mean, and
we kind of think like, what would you even use that for?
And like, in the future, we might have answers for that, like holograms.
Right. Well, no, exactly. The point I wanted to make is we'll find a way.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a free lunch, somebody's going to eat it.
Yeah. No, it'll be the first person shooters of the future will be reliant on that. Anyone who does not have that petabit per second.
Oh, that makes me so sad. Yeah. My Halo game is only going to get worse. That's great.
Yeah. Like, by the time, hey, I'm still entering my character's name on the screen and you've already killed me 15 times. Well, that's a good discussion. And you know what? I think that there's another part of this discussion we need to have, which is on Earth, speed, we've kind of cracked that nut. I mean, we've got it fast enough where the delays in communication are fairly small. I mean, even if you're on the other,
pretty negligible,
and they're not,
for most purposes.
Yeah, they're not speed based, really. Like we've been saying, they're bandwidth based.
Right. So, but there is something to say about speed obstacles, and that's when we start talking about getting off this planet and going somewhere else, and then communicating back home. So, in our next episode, I think we're going to focus on that. In the meantime, guys out there who are listening, I would highly recommend you get in touch with us. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you have any topics you think we should tackle in future episodes of Forward Thinking. You can get in touch with us with our email address. That's fwthinking@discovery.com. Or you can go to fwthinking.com and check out all the videos, the blog posts. You can look at the social media stuff we've got there. Come and join the conversation. Be part of it. We really look forward to speaking with you guys. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.